Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast, where we talk all things money and business. My name's Christian Allen. I am your host. With me, as always, Rodney the Pod Zabriskie. What's up, man?
Hey, glad to be here.
We had a cool interview today, huh?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I was glad to have Derek on and I'll let you introduce him, but yeah, I was really cool.
Yeah, so Derek Kenny, he is the author of Good Money Revolution, How to Make More Money to Do More Good. I really like the subtitle of his book. And I liked a lot about what he talked about, or a lot of the things he talked about go directly to that concept of making more money. Money's not bad, it's good, especially if you use it to do good. And I think Right. That's a message that we can get behind, especially we, you know, most of the people listening have money. But my experience working with high income earners and people who are high net worth is that they like that. They want to give, they want to do more good with it. And like he said, it's almost like a scorecard to help us grow and produce, but also help people. And from my perspective, that was like the big thing that I came at. And I think that's his core message. So it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing that I liked most is that he shared a lot of stories. Like he's coming at it, not just with these concepts and this philosophy, but with real life examples of people who are, you know, who are doing these things and kind of seeing the results.
Yeah. He's got stories everywhere, examples all over the place. I think people will enjoy it and definitely go get the book. Like even just going through the initial notes of it got me thinking about ideas that, you know, that we could implement in our business and mm-hmm. things that we could, well, basically things we could do to do more good with the money that we're making. And that's kind of an exciting thought, because so often we get focused on the end result being the money, but if we can get focused on the end result being the good we can do with the money, now all of a sudden, you know, that kind of unlocks opportunity beyond what you normally would have had. So, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Okay. So Derek Kenny, check him out on his podcast, The Good Money Podcast with Derek Kenny. He's got the book, Good Money Revolution, How to Make More Money to Do More Good. And you can check him out on all of his social media. Find him on Instagram and that kind of stuff. He's really great. I love the interview. It was a lot of fun. Without further ado, let's get into the interview with Derek Kenny. Okay, we are super excited to have with us today Derek Kenny, author of Good Money Revolution and host of the very popular Good Money podcast. Derek, thanks so much for coming on the show. We're super excited to have you.
Well, thank you, Christian and Rod. It's a real pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to our conversation together.
Okay, so I have done, over the last few days, I've done a fair amount of digging into who Derek Kenny is, and I'm excited to share some of that with the audience. Or I should say I'm excited for you to share some of that with the audience. But Derek, you have a super interesting backstory. You had a successful business and financial planning practice, and it sounds like you just up and sold it. Maybe it wasn't that. It was probably more calculated than that, but you decided to leave that behind and kind of move into a little bit of a different world.
Yeah, so let me take you to Boston. I was at the W Hotel. This was July of 2019, and I'm on my yearly sabbatical. So this is a time where I take about 5 or 6 days completely by myself to ask myself three questions. What can I do to be a better husband? How can I be a better father? And how can I be a better business owner? And so those three questions guide my time in terms of my planning. And my thought process on that is, does it make sense for me to take 1 week to really get clear on what it is I'm running really fast toward the other 51 weeks out of the year? So the sabbatical for me has been a really powerful time, but this particular time in Boston was real important because leading up to it for a few months, I'd been wrestling with, here I'd been a financial advisor, built what many people say a very successful practice for 25 years, but I really wanted to ask myself, is this what I wanted to keep doing, or was it time to really shape a different chapter in my life? And that morning, I began to write a list out of all the things I would enjoy doing. And I wrote down, write a book, launch a podcast, speak, coach, kind of like my wish list. And surprisingly, even shockingly, what wasn't on that list was being a financial advisor. Now, it wasn't that I didn't enjoy it and I didn't love my clients, but to really take my message bigger and to really go where I feel like my dream was and where I could really impact the most lives would mean selling my practice. And so the decision occurred early in the sabbatical. I was able just to relax the rest of the time and really dream about what could be in the future. So that really led me then in January of 2020 to sell the practice. This was before COVID broke out. I was there for 6 months to help transition each client. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done because you're going back and reliving the entire relationship. You know, one lady, people laughed with me, they cried. One lady summed it all up though. She said, Derek, if you're going to have a midlife crisis, which is what this sounds like to me, why don't you buy a Corvette? It's a whole lot cheaper. So that's where we are today.
That's great.
And that's the midlife crisis I want too, because I want a Corvette.
Who doesn't, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so one of the things that you mentioned is that, and I'm taking this back to you because I know that you had a very successful financial planning business that was well known. One of the things that you mentioned is that you can help business leaders differentiate themselves. And clearly you've done that both on that first front in your financial planning practice. And now as you've built a prolific podcast and written this book, like you're clearly doing that, but maybe you can expand on just your thought behind that and give us, because most of our listeners are, like we talked about, they're high income, high net worth, and oftentimes they're business leaders. And so I think that message will resonate.
Yeah, so let me tell you two stories. First of all, I'm going to take you back 25 years. I was really a young punk right out of college, and I had a communication degree. I loved to speak and talk and write. And so my dad always said, hey, get your degree. It's a stepping stone for the future. What he didn't tell me was that nobody hired people with communication degrees. And more importantly, nobody paid them anything. So I limp into this software company to be their marketing director. And what I realized was in a small company environment, you're at the whim of the boss and you're at the whim of how the sales are doing. My boss bounced our paycheck twice. He would let us know on Friday, hey, by the way, tomorrow, Saturday, is a work day. I have to call my wife and cancel our plans. But really what happened was I reached this crossroad where we had all worked extra hard, extra hours, shipping out this great product, but I got overlooked for a raise. And I realized I can either keep down this path, working hard, waiting for someone else to tell me what my value is, or I can put the chips on the table and bet on myself and move into a new path. And that's what led me to study at night and work full time while getting my financial planning licenses to build this business. Because I always enjoyed money and helping people make it. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool to build a business? So now let me tell you what the real story here. Mm. So what I realized was I had a passion for education. And I always enjoyed recognizing great students and great teachers. I went back to my high school alma mater. And what would happen is I would give the student of the month a $25 gift card and the teacher of the month a $50 gift card. I mean, that was nothing. But to these people recognized, it was like winning the lottery. So I would then take a picture with the principal and the teacher and the student, and it would go in the newspaper. Now, this was back really before the internet, if you will. And what happened was a couple months later, my phone began to ring. And people would call me and say, Derek, we want you to be our financial advisor. And after the third call, I remember asking, why are you calling me? Of all the advisors you can talk to, why are you picking me out of this entire city, this entire area? And the answer startled me. The woman said, I remember it plain as day, Derek, we know that we can invest with anybody, but not everybody shares the same values and the passions that we do. We love how you support education, and we want to work with someone who supports education as well. Well, that moment for me was pivotal in terms of what eventually led to a very booming business. And what happened was I realized people could invest their $500,000, $1 million and plus dollars with anybody, but they wanted to be part of something bigger. And it was that that really blew my business up. Now, let me fast forward about 20 years. I want to tell you about Dave. So Dave came in my office, long-term client. And you know those relationships you've got where you can just tell something is bothering the person without even saying a word. It's just all over them. I could tell the weight of the world was on this guy's shoulder. So we had some small talk. He sat down. I said, Dave, it's obvious something is bothering you. Spill it. Well, he goes on to tell me that, you know, he's got this small manufacturing firm, has his kids working at the company. Up till then, had been going very, very well. And he said, Derek, the business itself is doing great. I'm just not into it anymore. I'm not developing any type of meaning for my job. I don't look forward to going into the office. What can I do? And for some reason, I recall the words jumping out of my mouth. I said, Dave, is there a cause that you care deeply about? Well, I could tell the question really stunned him. He sat back and so forth, and he began to tell me a story. He said, Derek, a couple years ago, my wife and kids and I went overseas, and the village we went to, the guide talked about how this village really needed a schoolhouse built. The lack of education was holding back this entire village. And he recalled exchanging a glance with his wife of, you know, wouldn't it be nice to do something to help fund a school in this area? Well, they get back to the States, life gets busy, business is booming. And my question brought all of that back. And I said to him, Dave, what if you did this? What if you set a goal and you said, I'm going to increase my sales X percent and I'm going to give half of that increase to fund that school? Well, he had a big smile on his face, and suddenly he began to see what was possible. So we exchanged some more small talk. He left, comes back in 3 months later. He looks younger. He looks rejuvenated. This guy looks like he's all in. And I said, Dave, I got to tell you, you look like a completely different guy from 3 months ago. What happened? He said, Derek, I need to tell you, I was skeptical. When you told me about setting a sales goal and then giving half of that to fund the school, but what I did is we've done that and we've already funded half of that school. Well, wow. If you can imagine two grown men in a room together and both of us realizing that we've just helped accomplish something really, really cool. You know that feeling when you're helping extract potential out of someone and you see the opportunity really rising, and he began to realize, you know, Derek, I'm actually giving more, but I'm making more money as well. And so what all of that boiled down to was what I now call the generosity purpose. And what he did, and this works for somebody that has a business, or if they don't have a business, if they have a business, you can pick a cause that you care deeply about, a wrong you want to right, an injustice you see in the world. It could be clean water, homelessness, you know, lack of food, whatever it may be. And then you share with your customer base, hey, this is our generosity purpose and how we're going to run our business. And we're going to take a portion of all of our profits and we're going to help make our local community or the world better. Well, most people think about giving like if I give, I lose and the person or the organization receiving the money wins. It's a lose-win. But how this works, and it's amazing, it's proven time and time again, it's really the premise of the book, is the more that you're giving involves more people who want to then do business with you, and you then make more money. So you're giving more, but you're at the same time making more. And so individuals listening, high net worth, people who really like money, but they want to lay their head on the pillow at night and say, did I make a difference today? They can do the same thing. They can pick out a cause they care deeply about and use that as motivation as to why they should go make even more money. You know, don't just limit yourself to what you've got now. What if I really blew this up, but I used it with a purpose? You're still going to be making more money, and now you're making an impact today. So that whole concept, just to unpack it, has really been sort of resetting the conversation about money over the past couple months.
That's great. And it sounds like, you know, you're not just doing the same things that we always are doing. We're now being deliberate, right? You had a great guest on your podcast. I guess it was, oh, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 episodes ago, Bob Berg, who's one of my favorite
authors. Love Bob. He's great.
And
yeah.
He wrote the Go yes. Giver series, right? And it sounds similar in purpose, and at least the end goal is to help people, and that really resonates with me. So I think that's really cool. Thanks for sharing that.
So one thing you talked about in the course of sharing that that story and kind of the result is you talked about things that hold people back. Okay, and I know that you have what you call your 5 attitudes about money that hold people back. Talk to us about that and how we can try to rewire ourselves toward something better.
Yeah, and the preface of that is what's holding people back is often shame about what people have told them in terms of how they spend their money. You know, there's a lot of books out there, a lot of people talking about that if you buy a latte at your favorite coffee shop, man, you're bad because you could have made coffee at your house and ground the beans yourself and saved the $2 and you could put that toward retirement. And so this whole process, I call it a shame-free, common sense approach to making more money. And the whole concept is do you with your money. Meaning that, look, if you like to go to Starbucks 3 times a day, well, great. You know, I meet people all the time that they intentionally buy a luxury car because they feel better driving it and they make better decisions and they get better ideas and they make more money because of how they position themselves with what works for them. So the whole goal of this is all shame-free and how can you make money that's best for you. So one of the things that I find is what holds people back financially? And I'll share a quick story with you. There was a woman who called my office. I was in the office on a Saturday, just catching up on some things. And I saw that voicemail light blinking. And I knew I probably need to check this. When I picked up the voicemail, a frantic woman's voice was on the other end of the line. And she said, Derek, you've got to call me back. I bounced a check and I'm going to go to jail. Well, my gosh, if you heard something like that, that's shocking. It kind of blows your hair back. And I realized this is a message I can't let sit here over the weekend because this woman, for whatever reason, is going to be getting herself fitted for orange prison uniforms and it's going to go really bad. So I called her right back and I said, you know, tell me what's going on. She said, Derek, what happened is I wrote a check. I didn't move my money from savings to cover the checking and the check bounced. And I'm going to go to jail. And I said, okay, first of all, we will call the bank together on Monday as a courtesy to you and our relationship and help you move the money. We'll take care of that. But the bigger thing is, why do you think you're going to go to jail? And so she goes on to tell me a story that when she was a kid, this woman's about 55 years old right now. This is when she was 7 years old. She said, Derek, I saw my dad who had gone to the store to buy clothes and school supplies for us and for myself and my siblings. And she recalled seeing a phone call and overhearing it where the store manager said, sir, it looks like you bounced a check. You're going to go to jail. And he was adamant with his anger that you bounce a check, I'm going to penalize you to the fullest extent.
Wow.
Well, here was a woman who saw that as a kid. And at 55 years old, it was a trigger for her. And what it did is it filled in some gaps. You know those people where they have the outer trappings of success, but inside you can tell they're wrestling with something. And it led me to come to the conclusion that, you know, she'd always been a little bit reticent to take risk or to take advantage of investment opportunities I gave her that did well, but she would miss out on them. And it was all a fear of losing money, making a mistake, and that mistake would lead her to go to jail. Now, to the three of us talking right now, that can sound so crazy, but these are money beliefs and people base their lives. And so one of the ones I want to go back to is many people can relate to this where they might have seen their mom or dad or grandma or grandpa growing up, you know, bang their fist on the table occasionally and say, if only we had more money. Then we could do the things we want to do. Then we could enjoy the life we want. Well, what that sent as a message to you as a kid was, wow, money, is the key to happiness, and we don't have it, therefore we're not happy. Or what commonly can come up is somebody says, you know, Derek, money is reserved for the haves, and we happen to be the have-nots, and that's just how it is. Well, if you can imagine as a kid and you see that and you see people living into that, you're going to grow up with some of those same beliefs. And so part of the book is all about, number one, addressing that and moving forward. I like to ask, what is your next money move? And sometimes we find that a giant reset button is what successful people press all the time. They use it, and this is a reset for them to say, look, my past has passed, and it's time for me to look forward. Because I believe, I think the next 12, 18 months will be ripe for investment opportunities. I mean, you've got this whole metaverse, NFT, Bitcoin, some of the wild stuff over here happening. You've got new consumer trends emerging post-COVID. There's a lot of things for people to take advantage of, and I don't want their bad money beliefs to hold them back from possibly making their next $1 million.
I love it. Love it, love it. Okay, so I want to make sure we jump into some of the concepts in the book. And I'm sure that the things we've talked about so far are littered inside of it. But before we do that, I want to just talk about more directly your motivation behind the book. And I think you've hit on this, but what is the motivation? Where did it come from? And kind of what are you hoping to accomplish with your
message? Where the money, rather the message about money came from was, I began to hear in culture over the past couple years, and it's only gotten louder recently, that money is bad. And specifically, if you have a lot of money, well, you're bad. You're called the top 1%. You're criticized. You're scrutinized. You're villainized. And by golly, if you have a company that actually does really, really well, well, you must have achieved that by nefarious ways. Mm-hmm. You must have cheated your way to the top. Mm. And I want to pull that back because there are a couple of core values that I like. One is, I like money. Money to me is a scorecard that I keep. I call it the report card for adults, my net worth page. And it's just a way to measure and motivate me to make more money so I can do more good. It's just fun. Money is a game to me, and I just like to make it. And so when I hear people criticize people for making money, that really stuck in my craw. But here's what I found. When I've interviewed people like Damon John or Mark Randolph, who co-founded Netflix, and I talk to these guys about how they think about money, what I'm learning is most of the people who are making money or have money aren't thinking to themselves, boy, money is bad. They just want to make money because they like it and they like to do great things with it. It's typically people looking from the outside. It could be the media. It could be other people. It could just be people jealous and say, well, why did they have all the money? We should have money too. You need to share it with us. And they lob the stones and they lob the criticisms. And let me give you an example. Think about 2020. We're in the midst of COVID, okay? Consumer behavior is radically disrupted. No longer are people going to the local mom and pop shop. They're not able to go out and eat as much. Food delivery, Chipotle, a big food delivery of restaurant in our area, Amazon, Walmart.com. Mm-hmm. Those companies' stock prices, pizza companies, are soaring. And one of the things that I realized was, thank goodness for Amazon back then, because it helped me run my business, grow my business. My Ring doorbell was going off, you know, 3-4 times a day. Mm-hmm. So the sad part about that was Amazon was positioned in that moment to take advantage of a change in consumer patterns. And their stock price shot through the roof. Yeah. I own that stock. It was a trend I saw and other clients saw. You probably owned it as well. And the stock shot up. The problem was there was this criticism that came out from the media and other people that are out there saying, well, how can Amazon make so much money when other people are suffering financially? That's not right. And the whole argument was Amazon needs to be taxed and punished, and that money needs to be shared with the people who are less fortunate. Well, First of all, my heart goes out to the people who've lost a job, struggled financially, had to eat into their retirement just to make it. I mean, that's a serious deal. But is that directly connected to the value that Amazon has given to so many people, and that's why their stock price shot up? And I say no. And so right now, I think people have a decision to make. Now, your listeners, you know, they're high net worth. They know the value of a dollar, and they may be sitting here thinking, that is the most foreign concept I've ever heard. That makes zero sense. Mm-hmm. But to the general population, people are thinking, look, I can either keep criticizing Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and Bill Gates and you name the billionaire of the day and just really attack them with all the venom I have, or I can choose to take a step back and say, what could I learn from how they run their business and how they add value to their customers and the pain points they solve? And you know what? I'm going to leverage what I observe them doing, and I'm going to go make more money, and I'm going to have the accounts I want, and I'm going to then make the impact in the world I want. You know, we all have a limited amount of brain cells and a limited amount of breath every day. Do we want to waste those brain cells and breath lobbing criticism at billionaires? Now, are all of them good people? No, I'm not saying that. Or do we want to say, let's take the numbered days all of us have on this earth and go make more money so you can improve the quality of your life and the quality of your family, and you can make an impact now while you're living and use that as fuel to make even more money?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's well said. And I don't think we've even said the name of your book. So our Good Money Revolution, right, is the name of the book. And
yep.
I know in the book and in other places, you talk about the 7-step good money framework, right? And I'm sure you've hit on some of these things. But if you'll just help us kind of build that out, and what would you say is unique about it as compared to a lot of those other messages out there?
Yeah. So one of the core pieces of my book is not just get out of debt, because there's so much emphasis on, mm-hmm. hey, focus on your debt, get out of debt. Well, then people wonder, what's next? And all that energy goes for naught. Or they worry about, look, I need a financial plan right now for me, not what was best for my parents and not for my grandparents, but for my unique goals and dreams and fears and worries for my family, because things have changed. And yeah. So part of the book, and really the crux, is my Good Money 7-step framework. And most frameworks start off with, how much money do I need to save for retirement or pay off debt or get the house or the vacation home, which is fine. The problem is, as you think about COVID, many people have rethought, why am I making money? Why am I going to this job? Why am I spending time away from the people I love to create this wealth? And what I wanted to do was tie meaning to people's money. You know, you think about like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
On the bottom of that, you've got the mm-hmm. basic food, water, some would say Netflix. I'm just kidding. I mean, all these things are kind of basic now, but that pyramid sort of works itself up to the very top, and you've got words like fulfillment and meaning and basically full potential. The problem is most people find themselves waiting inadvertently until the end of their life to really make an impact. And so what I wanted to do was say, look, I want people to lay their head on their pillow at night every day, knowing that they were paid what they're worth, that they helped create value for people, and they helped make their local community better. And you know what? People love them. If they own a business, people love being their customer because they're part of something bigger. If you're an individual, you walk into a room and people walk up to you because they know you are a community advocate. You're someone making a difference. I mean, that's a beautiful feeling to know that every day you're making an impact. So I started this framework with what I call the generosity purpose. And that is, think back when you were a kid to a cause that you wanted to make an impact in. You know, for me, it was seeing the homeless. It was just the thought of, I'm living in a house as about a 10-year-old kid, but other people don't have that ability. or I began to support our local food bank, and I began to take an interest in clean water and the fact that these villages erupt in joy when they actually know that their kids are going to have clean water. It's so, so powerful. But even here in Arlington, Texas, where I live, you know, Bob Goff, who you may know, talked to me about, Derek, if you want to impact the world, start by walking across the street. And his point was, you don't have to go all the way around the world to make an impact. Look next door. Has a mom or dad lost their job? Have your kids have a friend at school that have a need that you could, you know, send $20 anonymously to? All of those are the real things. So that generosity purpose is what fuels individuals and business owners to make more money so they can make an impact. But then what I wanted to do was simplify. So many people, whether they have $10 million or they have $500,000, everybody wants a simpler way to play this money game. And so what I talk about is set three money goals each year. That's it. So many people start off the new year with, I want to lose weight, get a dog, get a cat, buy a car, pay off my house. And it's overwhelming. I mean, no wonder wine sales and chocolate sales go up. I mean, there's some serious stress there. I want to say three goals. And this could be on a sticky note. It could be on a note card. And you want to put it on your bathroom mirror. And you want to look at it every morning and every night. And you want to have it on your nightstand as a reminder. You want to keep one in your car. What am I being laser focused on with my money? Boy, if I want to save $25,000 for retirement, or I want to set aside $20,000 to launch a business, or I want to give X amount or pay off, what that does is it lets you get really, really clear, have total clarity, and then other goals tend to fall into place. And what I would also add to that, one more piece of that framework, is knowing how much money you want to make. And I want to just camp there for just a moment. You know, when I talk to people and say, well, how much money do you want? The answer is always more. But there's not a lot of clarity to that, okay? You know, many people I meet complain, Derek, I'm not paid what I'm worth. I should be paid more money. Well, let me give you a sad but true reality for all of you listening right now. If you're still in the workforce, right now, you are paid exactly what you're worth, because someone is giving you a paycheck right now. And that paycheck says where you are right now is how we value you. Now, you can choose to not like that. It may not be fair, may not be right, but it's the reality of where we are today economically. And you could choose to say, I'm going to go to a new company, and I'm going to make more money over there. And what I would caution you on is, what is the culture going to be like? So many people are jumping ship just to get that bigger paycheck, but once they land, they realize, this is not any better culturally than what I thought would be at my current company. Or you can define, for example, if you're making, you know, $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year, whatever it may be, and say, I want to make $200,000 a year, and you're currently at 175 or 150, well, now you know, here's the number I need to get to. So now there's a strategy that we can put in place, and what that looks like is developing a value plan to go to your boss or the CEO with, look, I'm not going to just bang on the door and demand money because my expenses have gone up. It's a losing argument. You know, one thing we need to realize is most bosses' favorite radio station is WIIFM. What's in it for me? Okay, that's, I mean, and most of our lives, most relationships is WIIFM. And if you can attract that radio station, you will do very, very well in life. But it's all about thinking about, how can I help this business grow? How can I help reduce costs? How can I build up more capacity and scale for my boss to have more time to do more dollar productive things? And then I can take some of those items on. You know, in the book, I talk about several examples of people who decided not to just bang the door and demand that raise, which they would likely get. They'll probably get a 4% raise this year, but not going to keep up with inflation. And you're not adding value to your long-term potential. Because I like people to make more money, because that means 401k matches are higher. That means everything is based on bonuses, are typically based on your income. So the more money you can make by adding value, I believe there's no better time than right now, as people call it the great resignation, the great labor shortage. good quality people who think about how to increase sales for their current company, whether they're an employee or the owner, I think will do very, very well and are positioned strategically for the future.
And I think in some of the stuff that we've seen, you refer to that as them being entrepreneurial, even inside of that kind of employee structure, right? And I think we have in our minds what an entrepreneur is, and yet I think you've just stated very eloquently how we can incorporate the same those same principles. We can be entrepreneurial. We can add value. We can figure out the ways where we can create more value, even in the context of what we're doing, without taking on, you know, starting our own business completely, right?
Yeah, and Rod, let me I'll share a quick story with you on that. So one of the women, her name was Debbie, and she worked in administration. So she was in charge of all the supplies for the company. So she knew what things cost and where savings might be. And she approached her boss and she said, look, I see that there are some ways we can save money. What if we tried out a creative strategy that every dollar that I found a way to save you, you would give me a quarter as a bonus? Well, at first it took her boss a while to sort of process this, but then her boss realized, well, that means I'm still netting out 75 cents in gain. Yeah, that makes sense. So what happened was this was a woman working because she wanted to, not because she necessarily needed to, but it was a way to be an entrepreneur inside of a company that most people would work 9 to 5. They answer the phones, they do this or that, buy the supplies. Now think about it. She was thinking about how can I make this company better, and immediately a spotlight shone on her. And she was a value contributor to the business. And she went on then to even get a separate designation to then help free up her boss. So she began to see some of the lower revenue clients, which allowed her boss to see the higher revenue clients and have capacity to bring more people in. So it's sort of contagious. Once you begin to think about, you know, if I'm going to be at a job 8 to 5, 9 to 5 every day, I might as well really enjoy it. And I might as well be thinking about how to grow it and really using my brain. And what often happens is that mentality leads to their own revenue stream, which, you know, as we know right now, many people are one global event away from losing their job. You know, we saw this with COVID, with Omicron, the political situation, you know, entire industries shut down. And that's why I think right now, the next 12 to 18 months are vital to ask yourself, you know, what are the problems that I find myself routinely solving for people on a daily basis? You know, what do people come to me with and say, could you help me with this? Mm-hmm. That one frame, if you will, I believe is an easy foundation to launch your side hustle. You know, so many people think, well, to make a side hustle, I need to learn how to code and I need to build this big a Bitcoin mining farm over here, and I need to do, it's like, no, just start where you're at right now, doing things you enjoy with the people who already see the value in what you provide. And that's, I think that debunks a lot of what people think in terms of their side hustle or side gigs. And the goal is you've got your own income stream. You know, one of the concepts that I talk about in the book is, what do we want to teach our kids? And so many kids grow up with the mentality that I get a 2-week paycheck because that's what mom or dad got. And so the financial system is all based on get paid every 2 weeks. The problem is they're the receiver of money, and we need to teach our kids and grandkids how to be the creator of money, where they've got a side income stream that nobody can ever take away. I mean, you think about somebody listening right now with $1 million, $2 million, and they want to make an impact on their family. I would just, you know, have a family meeting and talk about, hey, let's be curious together, you know, son or daughter, grandson, granddaughter, and let's help you build a business for yourself to really empower you for the future. Mm.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I like, so in my own world, I'm kind of going to go back a little bit and what you said earlier, but in my own world, I have two dyslexic and autistic kids. And this kind of concept, like, whether I wanted it to or not, it kind of just hit me in the face, right? Like, I had this kind of opportunity to start working and doing something with something just that just came and became really important to me. But I love the concept of doing things purposefully, doing things with your money purposely. And I love the concept of being an entrepreneur inside your business. So I want to hit on another concept inside the book that I thought was really interesting. And I also really love the subtitle of the book, which I believe is...
How to make more money to do more good.
To do more good. That's right. How to make more money to do more good. And inside that, you talk about... You know, the worst part is, Derek, I had it in my mind right before I started talking. I was like, I got this. And then it just slipped. But I like that concept. And specifically, you get into talking about these three levers that can help you actually accomplish that. Three levers that will help you make more money to do more good. And I thought that would be impactful for us to learn a little bit about.
Yeah. So let me go back. This was 2009. Actually, it was 2008. And I had just bought another business over in Dallas. We doubled the size of our financial planning practice, and everything went to hell in a handbasket, to be quite candid. The agreements I had with these other advisors, they all began to violate their non-compete agreements. They began to pursue the clients. It was terrible. It was really a dark moment for me because I had bet on myself. This was a big bet. And I thought, I can provide great service to these people, but I eventually had to relocate the entire office across the highway just to leave sort of this lion's den that had occurred that I just wasn't anticipating. Because I learned people, you know, contracts are only as good as the people who sign them. And once a contract is violated, I mean, the damage is done. Mm. You just have to move on and learn and take that as good business lessons in the future. So I say all that in the sense that, you know, when I was looking at the three money levers, during that time, 2008, the market was dropping like a rock. And as I was saving money, I built a good recurring revenue business. I could either save that into a checking or savings account, the more conservative way, but you're not going to make any money there. But what I did is I picked out a handful of stocks that I felt like once things bounce back, those stocks will do very, very well. And every 2 weeks, I would buy more shares. And every 2 weeks, the price dropped. It started off at like 90, went all the way down to like 16 over the course of those 14 months. But what I knew was you've got to bet on America. You've got to bet on these CEOs because they are incentivized to grow the stock price and add value. So that was the save more piece, was going against the tide of just tucking all this money away in a conservative account, but look where the trends were. Look where opportunity may be. So what happened was, this was March 6th, as I recall, 2009, when the sun came out. And all those seeds I had planted began to blossom, and it literally exploded my net worth. You know, and the same thing could have been done for people when they saw, you know, when COVID hit and the market drops from 35,000 to 18,000. It's a similar thing where you have to realize, you know, what if I was going to buy a big screen TV at Target and the price was suddenly $1,000 off? Well, I'm at Target buying that TV. But if Target stock, and I feel like it's been a good opportunity as an example, drops X percent, whoa, what happened? I don't know if I should buy that stock. And so we have a totally different mentality. So sometimes you just have to face that fear. Yeah. And you know this working with clients and guiding them through, look, here's an opportunity that we feel like long-term. So the save more piece was strategically saving that money. Then crushing the debt, the game I play there is, if you're working for a company right now and your boss came to you and said, look, the economy is getting soft, inflation's high, there's a lot of things happening, we need everybody to take a 20% pay cut or lose their job. Well, what would you do? If your back was against the wall, and in the book I talk about a conquistador named Hernan Cortez. This was back in the 1500s. And as the story goes, he took his men to this island to capture this world-renowned, elusive treasure. And as he arrives with his men, he says, burn the ships. And his men look at him incredulously like, what did you say? He said, burn the ships. We're not going home in our ships. We're going home in their ships. And that example to me is such a powerful one because sometimes you have to put your back against the wall and say, I'm not going to file bankruptcy. I'm not going to cower from this. I'm going to go straight through this. And I'm going to come out better on the other side for having gained all those money lessons, mistakes, failures, all together. And so it was during that time that I was able to save quite a bit and pay down my debt. I just set some aggressive, real aggressive goals to pay down some of the practice loans I had. And then the next one was making more money. And what I found here was a concept called capture and keep. And this is one that everybody can use. It's super practical. You can use it right now. And that is, think about your commoditized expenses. What I mean by that is things like your homeowner's insurance, automobile insurance, renter's insurance. In Texas, we can choose our electricity provider. If you're like me, nobody really asks, hey, how good's your electricity today? As long as it works, then it works, you know? So other, you know, your cable companies, your phone, all of those are commoditized expenses, meaning you can buy them from anybody. There's very little difference in the service or the quality. And you want to call the company up and say, look, I'm considering changing. Is there a new customer special, or is there a deal you can give me to help me save money to keep my business? Because they know if they don't, you're just going to bolt and go somewhere else. What most people do is, if they make those calls, is they do save money, but then typically there's the new computer on their desk, the new phone, the new truck on the curb, and they've not moved the ball forward financially. They've not eased any financial pain. So instead, you want to capture it and then keep the money immediately and put that savings toward your number one financial goal. In my case, it helped me shave off about 7 years off of my house. I took the savings, automatically direct deposited it to my mortgage. I had a 2.75 interest rate, which was very, very low, but it was just the principle of the matter that I wanted to kind of cheat the system and say, I'm not going to spend where most people spend. I'm going to save it. And without having to think about it every month, it dramatically reduced my debt over about a 5-year period. So all of those things you can do, and just demand that every dollar you earn is working as hard for you as you worked for it. And an example I would give you is this concept of being the CEO of your money. You know, if you have a business, and I use this example a lot, if you had a business and, you know, your employees were in the break room with no direction, you know, no telling them what you expected, they might come in late and leave early and goof around. Well, so many people have their money in the same situation. Imagine your dollars just hanging out in the break room and they're getting spent, they're going here, they're going there. You need to have a plan as a savvy investor to know before dollars even come in, where will they best benefit you and add the most value to you and any causes that you want to give to. And so that's why it's fun for me. Again, I think of money as a game. It's just fun to make it because of all the tools you've got and the benefit and the impact that you can have. Mm.
That's great. I love it. You've got a powerful message around money mindset. I think a lot of people can benefit from. Okay, so Derek, where can people? What's the best way for people to get the book and to find you and connect with you, follow you?
Yeah, so Instagram is probably my social media of choice. You can go to Derek T. Kinney. Follow us there. We upload new videos almost every day to really give people content and value, but also, you know, right now we've been talking about Good Money Revolution. I'll hold it up here. You can get this on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the local publishers. I'll only give you a link, though. If you go to goodmoneyrevolutionbook.com, goodmoneyrevolutionbook.com, I produce 2 bonus videos on how to save more, crush your debt, and earn more, those 3 money levers we just talked about, and how to get the raise you deserve. And so the book on Amazon's about $26.99. I think the videos are worth about 10 times that. So this is a way to get about $300 worth of value for the price of the book. And so, again, I'm in the value-adding business, and we want to make sure that I feel like it's a fresh way, shame-free, common sense for people to really make a lot more money and do more good this year.
Mm, I love it. Okay, so you can listen to Derek's popular podcast, Good Money. Oh, wait, is it good? It's Good Money.
Yeah, the Good Money podcast.
Right?
Yep.
Good Money podcast, Derek. And then follow him on Instagram and make sure you go get his book on Amazon. Derek, this has been amazing. I love your message. Super excited to share it with our audience and community. And we appreciate you so much coming on with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you both. And this has been a real fun conversation. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.